Welcome back. We're at episode 288. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. And as I mentioned before we started recording, I actually have a prepared presentation tonight. This is, I mean, every once in a while, I guess we'll do something, you know, that we've actually studied for a bit. But I actually did a presentation. I want to present something because stupidity had such an incredibly strong week that I decided that I would create an award, which I have named Incitatus, which means swift in Latin. And I've chosen that because this was the name of the horse that Caligula wanted to appoint to the Council of Sicily. So that's been regarded as perhaps the dumbest political act until current century. And so I thought, well, we'll just use it. Also, the word in Latin means swift, which I think also kind of captures the mental capacity of the people who are given the award. And I have a third place goes to Jay Ersifas. Now, this is a self-described queer person of color from a working class background. She has, in her company, she brought in the European LGBTQIA+ employee resource group. She also oversaw a month-long pride campaign. One of her highest moments was she was instrumental in initiating the first ever global safe space catch-up program for her company. And then she has written many articles promoting Lesbian Visibility Day and Trans Awareness Week. Now, she gets the award because you probably don't know what her actual job description is, do you? She was in charge of risk management for Silicon Valley Bank. I swear, I just absolutely, she was the risk management executive who I guess had a bad 3 years. Anyway, okay, so she only got the third place award. Now, in second place is the entire city council of Newark, New Jersey, because they created a sister city agreement with quite a bit of funding for a Hindu nation called the United States of Kalyasasa. Unfortunately, after they had created the program, it was pointed out that the nation doesn't exist and the person who had created the whole program was an absolute scam artist. And so it was a good idea, except that there wasn't any nation. So it was sad, but there you have it. Now that was second place. But in first place, the award is given to the nation of Georgia because this week they, through demonstrations, got a controversial bill removed from consideration from the legislature, the Georgian legislature. Now, their rationale was that this law could have prevented them from entering the EU because many people in the EU administration had said they didn't like it. Now, what the law would have done is it would have made any NGO that had more than 20% foreign, basically money or stock inside the company, more than 20% foreign owned, have to register as a foreign agent.
Okay, so it's like our FAR Act, right?
Yeah, and so the rationale was that no, we can't do this because this is the exact same law that Russia used to get rid of all of these wonderful NGOs. And we've been told that the EU will not let us in if we pass this law. And the example they gave as the beneficial NGO that Russia had kicked out, this is the one they actually put in print, was the Open Society Foundation from George Soros. They were afraid that organization, as just an example, could be exposed to daylight and thereby, you know, some laws would set in and the thing would be kicked out. So they are willingly wanting to enter the EU.
No, sorry, there's a popular uprising over this, some arcane foreign registration.
Basically the country has these color revolutionary.
Yeah, so basically the Open Society Foundation orchestrated the protest, probably.
Of course, I mean, exactly right. It's like a completely self-stimulating.
Hence proving the necessity of the law.
Exactly right. But the idea of like, we won't get into the EU, this is what I thought really they deserve.
The EU, yeah.
The Incitatus Award, because, I mean, at this point, if you can't see this thing as a sinking slave ship, that the only product the EU has so far is to give you gas stations with no gasoline and a never-ending supply of North African immigrants with attitude, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you want to turn your country in an autonomous zone, let's just get into the EU. So anyway, they get the award, Tim, and that is my presentation for the night.
I love that. It's like, well, yeah, that's why they passed the law, to prevent the very thing now that George
is going through. Exactly.
Yeah, right. The idea that there are actually crowds forming organically or spontaneously to oppose the Parliament passing a Foreign Agent Registration Act, it's not something that really get people excited over, unless you're acting for foreign agents.
And you're being paid, right? Exactly.
Being paid to do it.
It's really the question is just how dumb, can the populace get?
How dumb? Well, that's it. Well, I don't know.
It's just pathetic. So anyway, there you have it. The Open Society program can come in and turn the whole country into an autonomous zone. But they had a chance. There were people who wanted to stand up against it, and they failed.
So was the law repealed?
Yeah. No, actually, the law was just being brought before the legislature.
So they stopped.
They thought it was going to pass. It looked good. Then the demonstrations, the same exact process of the color revolution. They brought in agents, they spent money, they control the media. And then with like a couple hundred people in front of the Parliament, they were able to capture the video media, and then the legislature chickened out and backed away. And there is some rumors that there may have been some money exchanging hands to the legislature to make sure that they would just not even bring this thing to a vote. That's the rumor I'm just passing along. So there it is. No daylight for the NGOs inside of Georgia. And it's basically condemning the country. I think Georgia could be the next Ukraine.
Well, they attempted it back in 2000. Was it
They already have the antagonism with Russia, and the Ukraine looks like it's not going to be much of, what's left of the Ukraine in a couple months? Who only knows? Not much.
So I remember when Putin responded in 2008 to Georgia attacking, I guess, Russian forces. It was the South Ossetia. This similar situation where you have the eastern part being ethnically Russian and these things. It's people, look, Putin's invading. All these, and I was like, you do realize this is Georgia in Eurasia, not Georgia in the United States, right? So don't get so excited. I was like, Americans, we got to stop. Like John McCain at the time. You look at a map.
Right.
This is, again, another thing. They were trying to bring it into NATO. I think the government in Georgia at the time was being trained by Israel at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, it's kind of a template. You have the color revolution spawned by foreign agents and NGOs.
Was Samantha Powers there handing out cookies to the protesters or something?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, that actually, I know you're what you're referring to is Victoria Nuland in the Ukraine actually being in the crowd,
mm-hmm.
Passing out sweets and things to try to, show American support for the demonstration. I mean, you couldn't meddle more in the internal affairs of a country, other than just physically stuffing the ballot box, which of course is what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, the idea that it's democracy, or that's what democracy is, what they're promoting, is ridiculous. But,
Well, ordinarily, if you had a diplomat showing up and then, stoking on a revolution, or an uprising, that the government would declare that person persona non grata and expel him or her. But I guess that's not the way that we do things now. Because you referred to the Silicon Valley Bank failure, which apparently came out of nowhere, from what I understand, right?
Yeah.
Now, this is comes in a, yeah, from what I understand, is what's really happening here is, because it's completely predictable, because the Fed has been raising interest rates for 6 months now, since September, I think it was at half a percent a month. And so What happens is, I think since 2008 or 9, these banks have been forced to hold, I think, at least 20%, I think, of their portfolio in U.S. bonds. And of course, raising interest rates causes the bond price to drop, so your portfolio is plummeting in value. And of course, when that happens, you have to force, which causes the price to drop even more. So this is an unraveling, which is completely predictable and foreseeable. But nevertheless, the experts claim they don't foresee this happening. Of course, everyone works, all the top people at the bank were selling off their stock and cashing out. So, sure. You know, people losing money, but this is an inevitable process of this, zero percent interest rates that they've kept, artificially low for so many years. That's going to create asset bubbles, of course. And one asset bubble, of course, arguably the biggest asset bubble in the world, is the U.S. Treasury bonds. You know, and so when you raise interest rates, to stem inflation, which they don't appear to be doing, because they're destroying other aspects of the real productive economy, while still printing up funding money to spend, send tens of billions over to Ukraine, the interest rates causes the bond market prices, the face value, to drop. That's how I understand it.
Exactly right. And I'm just going to say that what will really be the kickoff to the apocalypse will be the collapse in real estate prices that'll be coming up, because at 5%, it wasn't so much the liar loan that was fueling this thing. It was the liar interest rate.
Yes. Because that's a misrepresentation of reality.
Yeah. It was way below the rate of inflation. So it was a lying interest rate instead of a lying, loan applicant. But it was the same thing. You were just pretending the value was X when it was really Y. And now with interest rates for a home loan, I think you can get like 5-6%. The homes are losing half their value. But this is going to cause, the Silicon Valley Bank is just tip of the iceberg, because when you start having a real acceleration in the decline of real estate prices, remember who owns those mortgages? It's all these small little banks, they got. Mm-hmm. And when they at the same time, when the 20% that they own in treasuries is like down 20% of par, I mean, it's the banks are so far underwater that you're going to need a gigantic bailout. I mean, you'll have to bail out trillions and trillions of dollars, which they're really, this is not something that hasn't been discussed and predicted. I mean, every single honest financial analyst in the last 5 years has been saying this is eventually is going to happen. It's just a question of when. Well, it could be now.
Could be now, could be next year, because when it comes to there's no there to the market. It's all based on illusion and fraud and bluff and a whole lot of coercion.
Chutzpah. It's based on chutzpah.
Well, maybe the problem is we have Jewish finance.
Yeah,
chutzpah. And we see that in the figure of Janet Yellen, as this is happening, where she's doling out billions of dollars to Ukraine to prolong a war there, which puts further strain on the real economy, production, energy, food, things that actually make life possible, as opposed to just funny money printing, created on a computer screen.
I used to live in Santa Monica, and the city council, the city was collapsing, the homeless problem was sort of destroying the middle class, and, they were very left-wing city, and they started coming out with proclamations concerning like Russia, Cuba. They were for Cuba. They were opposed. And I went to one of the meetings and I said, guys, do you know that really a city council of a tiny little city like Santa Monica really doesn't need to have a foreign policy? I mean, it's like so when you see Janet Yellen with a foreign policy which is out there helping Ukraine. I mean, we are just at the absolute end of the clown railroad road at this point, brother. I mean, it is just, it's completely.
Well, you have Merrick Garland went to Ukraine to announce a Nuremberg 2.0 war crimes proceedings against Russia, apparently, for war crimes committed in the war that the U.S., you know, provoked.
Right.
Chutzpah, more chutzpah here. But, you know, here, then, while he's away, the FBI is exposed having ties to the SPLC, which is tied to Antifa, which is engaged in domestic terrorism down in Georgia, right, as they attack a police training center or one that's being constructed. You know, it turns out that, yeah, their information they get, intelligence they get on right-wing domestic extremists comes from the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is itself is tied to a domestic terror group like Antifa, which the FBI doesn't seem to care about. I think like 23 were arrested, charged with domestic terrorism. Most were from out of state. So it's interstate, Merrick, Attorney General, that's interstate. There's a conspiracy
wasn't
here.
Wasn't there a Southern Poverty Law Center lawyer who got caught?
Yes, like, a Jurgen or something named Jurgen. Yeah, a lawyer was actually arrested.
This is crazy.
Yeah, and so yeah, again, just ridiculous. But yeah, as far as this guy, this collapse goes, I was listening to an interview with William Engdahl today talking about it. He said, just understand that all these collapses have always been engineered, meaning this is something that's always foreseeable. Whether it's 1929 or 2008, and it usually leads to some more of consolidation, wealth consolidation, it turns out. And again, this might be some, you know, again, pulling the trigger or at least pulling the rug out this you know, very fragile economy to get a collapse, and so they can usher in, you know, central bank digital currencies. You know,
interesting things going on this week. I mean, yeah. There was a rapprochement between Saudi Arabia and Iran.
But China brokering the deal, right?
China brokered. So that was kind of the first big transition point between two, you know, warring countries that I can recall that wasn't a NATO project. I mean, China was apparently tipped to stern, you know, with the guarantees and the lovemaking there, which was really interesting. And then the India-Russia oil transactions in the native countries. I mean, this, even though it's bizarre, for up to now, they'd been using the typical petrodollar.
Mm-hmm.
And that went away. And so this, if you look at it, you know, you'll see that there is quite a bit of erosion now. It's not just, you know, 0.5%. There's quite a bit of erosion taking place in terms of trade that is going on, not using the euro dollar.
Well, so, they better pass more sanctions.
Yeah, that will help.
Impose more sanctions on Russia.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you could call it senility, but I think there's something far more malevolent here. I do think that they're transitioning from the U.S. I mean, remember, they, I think it was Netanyahu, at least this was the quote that he was ascribed, was that, we're just going to eat up the United States until it's dry as straw. Mm-hmm. Remember that? There's some kind of quote like that where you're talking about, we control the U.S. and we're mm-hmm. just going to basically take everything, including the marrow and its bones. It was really, but I don't know if it was a true quote. I never find a citation. But in fact, if you look at like how they did transition, excuse me, from Britain at the end of World War II to the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
And then now it looks like they're on their way to someplace else because the U.S. could well be, you know, just in a state of perpetual collapse from here on out. I mean, it looks like we're clearly losing the munitions war against Russia through our proxy in the Ukraine. The entire NATO, right, is just flat out losing. So this is indicative of the deindustrialization of this zone. And of the ascendancy of other nations. So who knows, that we could be looking at the new world order, and the US and Europe could just be slave states, and the nations that would be in use in the ascendancy would be like India, China, Russia.
Yeah. And so again, a lot of this debt, again, that's a bookkeeping thing. And yeah. One way to solve it is just to burn the books.
Right, exactly.
Like the old days, he'd go after the user and burn the books and clean slate. Call it a jubilee.
Yeah.
And that's how you handle some of these, like these deflationary bank crises is make everyone get a haircut and it kind of evens out. But the problem is with all these bank crises is it's always a few getting rich at the expense of the many, you know.
Yeah,
they never want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's always, as Engels said, these things are always projects. They're not just, you know, ad hoc and spontaneous, you know, crisis that comes out of nowhere. They're designed, they're controlled, and because they can predict them, they can make a lot of money, like George Soros with his genius insight into interest rates movement, you know. And
it's musical chairs, you know, and the music stops, you know, when you always have a seat.
Yeah. You can make your bets and you can have your billions, and then you can use that for social good, like in Seattle and Portland, all the other places George Soros has made such a big difference.
Yep. Yep. Well, this past week, Fox News' Tucker Carlson was all the rage, even though the big real story really isn't Tucker Carlson. It's what's being revealed with this footage, January 6th footage. Now, this is something I think that a lot of people have known already, that you know, it was misrepresented, you know, by the Democrats, by the media, and many Republicans. You know, this whole insurrection narrative has always been absurd. But what happened was House Speaker Kevin McCarthy gave Tucker Carlson, at least his team, unfettered access to some 40,000 hours of footage that the government, for some reason, kept hidden from the American public. From individuals that were charged by the Justice Department, of course, which would be possible exculpatory evidence, which is illegal. The Capitol Hill Police and Justice Department designated the recordings as highly sensitive material in 2021. Still, the trove remains under tight protective orders, and the defendants must get strict rules before getting access to the clips entered as evidence against them, which I don't quite understand as being constitutional. They have full access to it. The Capitol Police turned over to the FBI, I think, 14,000 hours of video covering hours of noon to 8 p.m. on January 6th, but the full 24-hour reel has been in the hands of the House Democrats for 2 years, reportedly. So they had full access to this material. Tucker's series exposed the falsehoods that bolster the January 6th narrative. One thing that he did do, well, first, this is, you know, one thing we heard the media said it was a deadly insurrection. We heard that deadly insurrection. Here, let me play this. This will give you a flavor of how it was being covered at the time.
January 6th, an estimated 2,000 rioters breached the Capitol building, causing the deaths of 5 police officers.
Certain dates echo throughout history. December 7th, 1941. September 11th, 2001. And January 6th, beat officers with anything they had on them, hockey stick, flagpole, a fire extinguisher. Police officers died.
Donald Trump supporters, who, of course, rioted and killed police officers. There was a deadly insurrection that the right wing is trying to cover up.
He incited a deadly insurrection.
A violent, deadly insurrection on the Capitol 9 months ago. It was about white supremacy, in my view.
Okay, white supremacy. He just pulled that out of the air. Why not just throw it out there, see if it sticks? Media will make it stick. But that's the type of coverage the Americans were fed back in 2021. Of course, this also created the political environment where the Democrats who then controlled the House of Representatives, who had that January 6th committee throughout the summer of I guess it was 2021 all the way into 2022, I believe. In the run-up to the midterm elections. Of course, the accusations like 5 police officers dying that day, completely false. No police officers died on Capitol Hill that day. One died the next day of a stroke, Brian Sicknick. I think 3 or 4 others, strange, oddly enough, committed suicide the ensuing months. I always thought that was strange. There were deaths that day, of course, but they're all among the protesters. So again, another thing is that another piece that Tucker Carlson shared with us was the video regarding Jacob Chansley, the so-called QAnon shaman. Of course, he was sentenced to prison for 41 months in a federal penitentiary under a coarse plea bargain. They put him in solitary confinement for 300 days. He's already had mental illness, from what I understand. And so they broke him. They kept that evidence from his lawyer. Chris, you saw the videos of him being escorted. He did not break. He was not violent. He was escorted, allowed in these rooms. That was kept from him and his lawyer and from the judge. To this day, I think there have been 1,000 arrests, 500 convictions. And a lot of these are coerced plea deals. People can't afford attorneys. They're faced with several years in prison for simple, I think disrupting a public procedure or misdemeanor trespass. I think one group was charged with not insurrection, sedition, which was ridiculous. Nevertheless, that was the Proud Boy contingent. There are many as 100 still have been in jail for 26 months waiting their trial. And yeah. The federal judges have allowed the prosecutors to prolong this thing in complete violation of their constitutional rights. Of course, Jacob Chansley's constitutional rights were violated because this evidence wasn't allowed in his proceedings. I don't know what the status of his plea agreement is, given the fact that there's fraud. To me, fraud vitiates everything. I thought that's what the law is, but I'm sure they can make some legal argument to keep him in jail. But it's outrageous. The reaction, of course, was even more interesting because it was almost those on Capitol Hill said, you're going to believe your lying eyes, you're going to believe us, right? That old saying. Chuck Schumer called for Tucker Carlson to be censored, not the first program not to be allowed to be aired. So you have a U.S. Senator, the majority leader, openly calling for censorship. Mitch McConnell, again, no one's challenging the veracity of the tapes. They're claiming that it was bad for Tucker Carlson to air them. So what they're saying is the public should not be given this information. Then they blame Tucker Carlson for cherry picking. You had Ken Burns went on CNN. He accused Tucker Carlson of cherry picking to distort history. This is this is really ironic because Ken Burns has made a career out of cherry picking footage to create narratives that support the interest of the oligarchs. And there he is accusing Tucker Carlson. He says that somehow it's a threat to democracy. I thought democracy died in darkness. That was not what the Washington Post says. But anyway, obviously the footage unravels or deconstructs or blows apart the official narrative of January 6th being a deadly insurrection. What it was pretty much agree with how Tucker Carlson describes it. It was a protest that got riotous in some areas. For the most part, people behaved pretty well. But they spun it into this for political reasons. They even, Brian Sicknick, the Capitol Hill police officer who died of a stroke the following day, they claimed, of course, he was murdered that day. They told a story he was hit with a fire extinguisher. The New York Times ran with that. Now, there's no way that story was ever true because it was like a misunderstanding. They completely, someone really had to make that up and print it. They retracted it a few weeks later, but they laid his remains in state on Capitol Hill. And the politicians showed up, unscrupulous politicians showed up as if he was like a fallen president or like he was John F. Kennedy or something.
War hero.
Yeah, the theatrics of it all. And it was such a big lie. That's what Chuck Schumer accused Tucker Carlson of, a big lie. That's ironic. It's such a big lie. And I mean, the idea of the big lie, that comes from Adolf Hitler, by the way. Now, Adolf Hitler writes about, he's not advocating the big lie. He's accusing his adversaries of telling big lies. And that's what people don't, they're telling the big lie. The big lie is that this was an insurrection. Where, again, anyone with half a brain and a little bit of integrity knows that's ridiculous. So what say you?
Well, I'm in agreement with your understanding of all that. The video showed that there were some actual altercations and destruction of property. Mm-hmm. There are two examples of this. A window was broken using some kind of a device like a battering ram. And then there was about 20 individuals that were in a fracas with police
but wasn't particularly violent. It was just pushing and shoving. So these two episodes were then the video presentation of the insurrection to the public. But it has never been, to my satisfaction, determined that even those two minor fracases were actually legitimate Trump supporters, because it has been well documented that there were agent provocateurs in and lifetime actors inside the demonstration. I mean, that is what is clear. So, you know, what you'd want to do to actually understand the two episodes would be to like find out who these individuals were and then see what kind of relationship.
That's right. Have. Merrick Garland, both Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, and Christopher Wray, the Director of FBI, refused to answer that direct question if there are any FBI
exactly.
agent provocateurs or agents within the crowd. They refused to answer that question.
So, well, it has been at least demonstrated to my satisfaction that there were. And so therefore, when I look at those altercations, this is what my explanation is of those events. So I would say that the Trump supporters then are well documented by the videos of being completely peaceful. In fact, they were actually kind of befuddled. You know, there was no anger or rage whatsoever. They were sort of confused, wandering around. There are a number of videos of police escorting these people into the building.
Mm-hmm.
Explaining them where to go, where the different offices were. So, I mean, these people were under the impression, and which would be completely natural to have, that the protest that they were engaged in was a legal act. I mean, when the police are helping you, the Capitol Police, the people who are there in uniform to protect the building, are actually helping you to the different offices and escorting you around the building. What other conclusion can you have? The poor QAnon shaman, they have a very detailed video of his entire trek into the Senate floor. And every step of it, he is escorted by police. And I don't mean one. I mean, he has a group of them around the whole time. They're telling him where to go. He actually is engaging with them in conversation. And so his conviction is simply ridiculous. I mean, it's absolutely in defiance of what the video evidence is, which is 100% demonstrative of his innocence, because he's under video surveillance from the second he comes into the building. So if I was his attorney, I would just be suing the lights out of every single one of the people who had brought charges who did not permit this evidence to get to him. The defense attorney never was given access to all of this videotape. Absolute violation of the rights of the individual, of the QAnon shaman. And so there you have it. It was a railroading just to create a theatrical victim for a purely theatrical event. The other thing which really irked me was the video that you sent me of Bill Maher.
Yes.
And he did a very smarmy, comic, denunciation of Tucker Carlson. And what he did was that he took Carlson's words and then played the actual video of this tiny fraction of the video, which actually had this fracas.
Mm-hmm.
And breaking of a window, right? And so he was ridiculing Tucker's words by the juxtaposition of his words with these two exceptional moments to the whole process. Now, in fact, if you look at Carlson's video, he had those events documented.
Yes.
He presented them. He didn't, you know, not show this in his video presentation. But he actually described them for what they were. But then he went on and his words then described the video that he was presenting for the first time. So Maher was just lying and engaging in really kind of just stupid propaganda by completely inverting what Carlson had done. In other words, and it's really disgusting, because he was actually sort of committing the crime that he was accusing Carlson of doing, mm-hmm. of being, you know, editing. And whereas Carlson had been very honest about what he was presenting and his words were describing the actual video that he was presenting to the public, Maher just was presenting video in a way to ridicule Carlson's words. So I'll just say that, he's engaging in sophistry, it's propaganda. And even though he was laughing with his kind of infectious comic, way of just sort of engaging, like, gee, I'm just so witty, I'm so funny. It was really quite pathetic, actually, when you really looked at the actual details of his presentation, because he's just in a very mean-spirited and lying fashion, he's just trying to ridicule what is really an important disclosure for the American public, right? I mean, as you said, it just says, look, are you going to believe your lying eyes? Or are you going to believe the propaganda? This yeah. really gave the public the truth. You could see exactly what everyone had been saying about the protest was correct. It was peaceful. The idea of calling it an insurrection is ridiculous.
Yeah, Merrick Garland actually had a press conference claimed the five police officers were murdered by protesters, which is a obvious lie, and it goes unchallenged by the press. I mean, you repeat Joe Biden has said that several times, and simply is not the case, and it's known it's not the case. But again, if you just repeat it, a certain percentage of the public is going to believe it no matter what they see. It's again, it's the what's funny thing, what I see here is that the House, a lot of these octogenarians who are still among the top of the political class, they're living in a world that's gone. They think if they just come out and say it, like Chuck Schumer saying it, and it's repeated by CBS News or NBC News, or the New York Times, that's going to be what the public believes. What they don't realize is that for more than 20 years now, people get news from multiple sources now, which is why there has been an attempt in the past 5 to 7 years to shut down, social media, like what's coming out with the Twitter files, and what they're doing at Google, what they do at Facebook, the idea of curating information and censoring people and, shadow banning and these things and de-amplifying, as they say, because they want to control that flow of information. But again, for more than 2 years now, I think at least half the public has known that the narrative of January 6th being an armed or deadly insurrection was BS, total BS. So half the public is just watching these committee hearings, these stage hearings that they held on the January 6th committee. No one cared outside the Beltway what was going on there. It was like just a show inside the Beltway. But people knew it was a partisan hack operation and had no credibility with the public. They're still living pretending like it's 1974 or 73 and it's Watergate. And the Washington Post, New York Times ruled the roost. But that era is gone, and we don't have a Walter Cronkite or a Tom Brokaw or even a Dan Rather to feed us the news. So now people come from multiple sources. So the problem is that people now, it almost as if people are living in a alternative reality. That one side lives in a fantasy world. So they believe these things, or they act like they believe these things. And that's what we're seeing here. But again, what we're seeing is sort of the destruction of any legitimacy that government has, that these new media institutions have, and deserved, well-deserved, actually. But the reason why we have government buildings with, ornate government buildings with columns is to bestow some sort of awe and respect. And they've completely besmirched that, smeared it, slimed it with their own cynical, exploitation of the events that day. Again, they've oversimplified it. They've boiled it down into something that never really occurred, just to gain political gains. One thing what they want to do is as elections become even more corrupt, even more shoddy and corrupt in our country, they want to discredit any questioning of election results, because you don't want to have another January 6th, do you? So you better not do this. And that's why there was a Sherwin, the prosecutor who's prosecuting these people, says, we want to do a shock and awe, arrest as many people as possible. I was listening to Julie Kelly talk about it. She's the one that's been writing about it from American Greatness, covering it, the mistreatment of some of these defendants. And she was saying how what they with pretty much what the Department of Justice did, the FBI did, is they just arrested people, vacuumed it up, then found the charges later on. And they've, again, they're able to do this because it's the federal judges in Washington, D.C. that have enabled this. And they're the real evildoers in this one, because they're supposed to step in and not allow them to do this, regardless of the violation, abuse of power by the U.S. Attorney's office, what we're seeing here. But they've allowed them to get away with this, to keep people in prison for 2 years out of trial. Remember, these are people who don't have an income. A lot of people have families to support, so it's easy to break them. You know, the legal system can break you so easily if it wants to. And you don't. And when you have judges not holding U.S. attorneys or prosecutors or law enforcement to account for this, you get abuse like this. And because it was political, because these people didn't have fashionable opinions, because the regime wanted to support the insurrection narrative, because it wanted to legitimize Biden's highly questionable election the previous November. You know, people forget that day there was going to be real challenges to the certification that they'd given, all the problems in the several states that got Joe Biden, you know, the presidency. And then you had this gaslighting of the media, saying some of it became a conspiracy theory to have any doubts about the results of the 2020 presidential election. You know, I was like, what are you talking about? You created all this mail-in voting nonsense, which is no accountability, no chain of custody, rampant corruption, presumed when you have an election like that, especially when you have last minute, middle of the night reverses in the results that handed Biden all the states he needed to secure the election. How about that? You know.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I really do believe that the entire thing was a theatrical production, and it was designed to basically shatter the confidence and psychology of Europeans. You know, that's what I would characterize. Well,
that's why Joe Biden's calling it white supremacy.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, remember what, you know, when you have MAGA, Make America Great Again, which of course is, dog whistle supposedly for Make America White Again.
Yeah.
Right. So you have the European, particularly the European male, is, the white supremacist civilian terrorist that they're trying to create this meme regarding, so they can intimidate people this group from ever, protesting the fact that, well, our democratic rights have been taken from us, right? So that this is all just leading up to a kind of intimidation. And I, when you look at 1-6, it's really obviously very weak propaganda. I mean, it, even before the tape came out, it wasn't, I think, cutting very deeply. My position is that they're at kind of a diminishing returns where they can try these kinds of stupid propaganda techniques, but they're actually not getting more people to believe, their sophistry. They're creating more rebellion. It's mm-hmm. sort of like the vaccine propaganda. I think at the end of it, now they're saying that a lot of American families aren't taking vaccines at all because they're so concerned about all the lying and the exposure of the propaganda, so they're actually more skeptical now. And I think 1-6 is, even before the release of the video, was sort of at that point because it was so stupid and weak and because the narrative already fallen apart to so much a degree, because you had all these individuals who were supposedly dead, like the five dead cops, that stuff had already fallen away. So people were suspicious of it, I think, in general. And now that
this the idea that protesting an election, when just the election before, they had a riot on the day Donald Trump was inaugurated, with rioters burning private property, cars, attacking police officers, and declaring his election fraudulent. I don't think the Democrats have said that a Republican candidate has legitimately won elections since 1988. Every election has been fraud. 2000, 2004, 2016. Hillary Clinton. Remember the whole Russia thing. Russia got Trump elected, and they actually tried to impeach Trump over that. Talk about trumped up charges. I mean, January 6th committee, how about the whole impeachment nonsense? They even impeached after he had supposedly been defeated.
Right.
You know, like, what? Right. He's leaving office. Why are you impeaching him? Because they want to run again. Ah, whatever. But it's, again, at this point, it is so absurd from a party. Again, not to mention the fact that that year, 2020, in Labor Day weekend, a mob tried to burn down the White House and did burn a church. And attack, and the DC police didn't refuse to offer help to the Secret Service. President Trump apparently had to evacuate or go into a bunker or something, and all that. No, I mean, again, there's no committee hearing investigations on that. No charges of insurrection. You had riots throughout the country that caused billions of dollars of property damage. It caused a murder, homicide rate to skyrocket throughout the country. Thousands and thousands of people have probably murdered that year because of all the riotous behavior, breakdown of law and order, which had facilitated by state and local and the federal government. Trump also holds responsibility for that. He didn't declare martial law or anything, or send in the National Guard when there was a breakdown, a stand down in many of these states. You had, I think dozens of police officers were injured or killed. You had dozens of people murdered. These riots, again, I mentioned billions of dollars of property damage, but these were mostly peaceful. And then they turn around and they try to declare this, which is by all standards of protest, was pretty mild compared to the cumulative property destruction that the left has done throughout the years in protesting. What if occupying a government building, that happens all the time. Supreme Court justices, when they're being confirmed or there's hearings, people would occupy Senate office buildings. You had state capitol buildings being occupied by public employee unions, like in Wisconsin a few years ago. This is all standard. No one was ever declared an insurrectionist and thrown in the prison for 2 years without a trial, and then tossed in the slammer for 4 years on some trumped up charge. I mean, obviously he wasn't violent. I mean, I'm referring to Jacob Chansley, the QAnon shaman. But again, there are hundreds of people facing years in prison for simply just trespassing. They didn't even know they were trespassing. In some cases, they may not have even been trespassing because they're being let in. You know, that's, to me, that's an implication. You're being invited. But it's just outrageous. I mean, right. Again, well, you know.
I would say that the way that sort of the European, to come up with an expression, political representatives are responding to this is incorrect, because we're always on the defensive. We're always in the negation part of the argument. They attack, and then we are on the defensive trying to point out, well, this is completely untrue, and here's this detail, that detail. It's really, you have to understand the advantage of initiative in propaganda, and of course, in human argument as well. A skilled debater will never, lose the initiative. He will just be attacking the entire time. You know, this is just how these things are structured if you're going to win. Well, here, it's the same thing. Rather than like going through the details and trying to negate their attack, what I would love to see someone take on, some European political representative, is to attack and say, we're not even going to talk about insurrection. This has been disproven. Mm-hmm. What's on the table now is why you did this to us. What was your point? Since it's obviously ridiculous, this claim, why are you hurling it? Now, obviously, there's political, gain to be made through it, but there's something more going on here. There's something more going on. I'd really like to see someone linking this into, as an example, the authoritarian personality, which of course wasn't just the promotion of pornography, but it was also the destruction of ethnic pride, right? That they had the pseudoscience was designed to, bring about as something that all of these psychologists who were going to organize themselves would eventually achieve. I would love someone to like take on the attack against the European. European American that the 1/6 fantasy represents, and attack it as propaganda and try.
Well,
to
they did that when they
now the propaganda. Yeah.
When Joe Biden pulls the white supremacy charge out of apparently thin air, out of the ether, that's the authoritarian personality you're saying, because most of the protesters there are white. Therefore, must be white supremacist. You blame white people for it as a group. Okay, well, I look at the George Floyd protests, and I look at a lot of them were black. So now, I mean, should we bring up black primitivism or black savagery? looking at these protests, the property destruction, the crime? I mean, it goes both ways, I suppose. I mean, it's like,
well, I just think it'd be so useful to take that approach. And yeah. If for no other reason, to start this process, this is a really valuable process. The first politicians who start it will, of course, be slaughtered because the whole weight of the controlled media will focus on them and try to say this is coming from a bad place in the heart. And it might be, my God, brought about by anti-Semitism or some other, you know, psychological illness that, you know, is making this person see these details. But if enough of them do it, because let's face it, this is exactly what it is. This is exactly what the 1/6 theatrical production was designed to do. There's no other reason for its existence, certainly no other reason for the way it was promoted, other than just to shatter the mind of the European. You know, you can't have a peaceful protest, no matter how egregious the election fraud was. Doesn't matter, you know, you're a second-class citizen. You need to attack, and you need to go after the rationale that is behind it. Because if they do that, they'll wake a lot of people up, but they'll also get ahead of the propaganda a little bit. It'd be nice to have an America where, when these kinds of theatrical productions were starting to come about, you know, and be organized against like Europeans or whoever they're trying to control, that at the onset, there would be some voice that would, you know, some group that would actually try to do a cold-blooded and logical analysis of what the purpose of the theatrical event was. It would be great, instead of them always, all you see in the media, even now, after the release of the video by Carlson, all you hear is the negative argument, you know, like, well, see, we're not really this, we're not really that. We know we're not these things. We obviously are not these things. Look at the video. The question is what are they?
Yeah.
What are the people who brought the charges? Why did they do this? Why do they think it would be successful? What is the propaganda skill that they have that they're exercising against us? What is the media? What is it? You see, these questions, if they come up, this could really, you know, we could use the this particular revelation as a way to help really accelerate the whole deconstruction of the secret.
Yeah, why was the media almost in unison repeating the same talking points?
Exactly.
Deadly insurrection. Right. Insurrection. Yeah. If there was a real, you know, heterodox media out there representing a variety of opinions, you'd have different interpretations of those days. Basically, these are again, they wouldn't be spinning the same narrative. And you know, anyone knows, obviously, you're going to film video when it's presented. The footage is going to be used for a political reason. You're going to cherry pick it and show it. And one thing that was funny this week is the Anti-Defamation League came out and sent a tweet out that criticized Donald Trump for being anti-Semitic because he gave a speech that he called for the expulsion of warmongers, globalists, communists, and those who hate America. And he said he was anti-Semitic for saying that.
Boy, doesn't look like anti-Semitism is going to be held in very high regard. I mean, my God, those are like, it's not going to be a useful insult much longer if those are the attributes.
So is it to say, so, I mean, ADL's saying that Jews are warmongers, globalists, and communists.
Right.
It's like,
is that what they're saying?
Saying? It's like, it's almost like David Icke called out the lizard people. Wait a second. Is this about us? I didn't say that. You're saying that. You know, but sometimes I think again that ADL. I think the those in Jewish literature have lost whatever IQ advantage they used to have.
Seems that way. Yeah.
There's so much for having the higher IQ, because what he's saying. Because I was watching the Twitter feed on this, and you're like normies calling this out. What are you saying? You're saying everyone's got. Wait a second. It's like. Well, I'm against pedophilia. What do you ask? Is that anti-Semitic? Well, again, if you do follow the logic of the authoritarian personality, which most people aren't really aware of, in a sense, all those things are anti-Semitic in the sense that the authoritarian personality understands that term. You know,
of course they are.
You know, that's in a way. I mean, in the way they understand, not the way that most people, know, like as Joe Sobrand's quip, I used to be an anti-Semite with someone who didn't like Jews. Now it's someone Jews don't like. And they throw that around.
I mean, if you look at the authoritarian personality and just look at the categories that it creates, I mean, basically it has laid out a roadmap for Europeans to follow back to some kind of political sanity. You just do exactly the opposite.
Yeah, reverse engineer the authoritarian personality.
So what is neurosis? I mean, it's because everything there is an attack. It is an attack. And so this defines the attribute as something that creates power and strength and it was attacked. So there you have it. So that's why when you look at the, you know, it's not just the onset of pornography. It's the breakdown of ethnic pride. I mean, these are the, you know, this is the goals of that are just clearly stated in the authoritarian personality.
Now it's a breakdown of male-female identity.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
you rob you of your ethnic identity, of your religion, and now it's your literally your identity as what you are, male-female. You know,
but this was anticipated. I mean, both by Gregor Lukacs, you know, and the Hungarian Soviet when they were trying to disassociate the children. After a morning of sexual degenerate education, then they would try to break their minds with the fairy tales, right? So they're just leading them into not any kind of clear-cut identity as being human. And then Herbert Marcuse in Eros and Civilization, which was really, you know, it's a nothing book today because it's so stupid. But at that time, it was getting huge promotion. It was really... For the hippies that were able to read, it was, you know, kind of a bedtime companion. And it was very specific about poly, not just sort of bisexual, but kind of gender journey, right? Mm-hmm. Where you could become, you know, for a while you'll want to be with men. And then some other times you could be with another. And then who knows, you know. And then, of course, it was always pointing out the negative and neurotic aspects of proper hygiene. So this is I'm absolutely serious. So this is your Eros in Civilization coming from the Frankfurt School, their vision of the future, which now when you look at TikTok and the kind of pornographication, you know, is that a word, you know, where they're just the entire world is pornography, where every connection between men and women start out with, they ask the women, what's your body count or what's the most degenerate thing you've ever done? And the women are so soulless at this point. They've been so shattered that they don't even know that by entering into these discussions in public, they're really limiting the possibilities for companionship and marriage and children in the future, right?
Yeah, they can't bond with anybody at that point.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there just is no way. If you're into that world, into the pornographic world, you're not. It's not going to be easy to transition into the world of a monogamous relationship. You'll just look back when you're 50 years old and alone and wonder, well, what went wrong with my life?
You know? And there's all those dating apps are all Jewish owned too. So
are they? Yeah. Yep. So anyway, I mean, it's just I'm really delighted. I mean, weren't you with that Carlson or that McCarthy gave it to Carlson and he brought out the videos? This was it's very useful. And, you know, and I noticed that they've tried to sweep it under the table, but they just can't quite get rid of it. It just keeps popping.
Well, the reaction was so overwrought that they gave and the reaction is more interesting. Again, no one's challenging the tapes. No one's suggesting that it misrepresents anything. They're just saying it's awful that it was shown because it challenges their narrative. You know, again, the absurd narrative that, you know, that it was a challenge to democracy, whatever that means. At the same time, they're calling for censorship, which I thought democracy required openness of information and debate, but that's what the Washington Post claims. It's the irony of it all, you know, it's like...
That's ridiculous,
you know,
yeah.
Did you... you're talking about this idea of destroying ethnic identity and these things. There was a case up in, I think it was in Pennsylvania, a high school, where some students got together and after school they started a Christian group to meet after school. And schools often sponsor these groups. And so there was a Christian group that started meeting up there. And there was a history professor or a social studies professor, I forget, but... He didn't like this, and of course he's Jewish. So in response, he started a Satanist group. In response, and claimed that it was a religious group too. Well, the sculptor said, no, it's not really real. We're not going to let you do this because it's not a valid religion. And we know why you're doing it. So the ACLU steps in, threatens to sue them. And so you have so many days unless you grant them to do this. So the response from the school is just to cancel the Christian group.
Of course, and he gets what he wanted.
You see the trick there?
Yeah.
And so in the void created by the suspension of the Christian group, the liberal values, read Jewish values, are vindicated. They fill the void. Because, but basically, his goal, obviously, his motivation was antipathy or hatred towards Christianity. He got rid of the Christian group. Under the guise of litigation, First Amendment. That's an old trick. That goes back to Leo Pfeffer and the American Jewish Committee and their agitation to get school prayer out of the schools, to create the naked public square, supposedly, to create neutrality. Well, it's not neutrality because their values fill the void. But that's a typical maneuver there, you know.
Yeah, and I think the right response is to, there's only two choices here. You can either take control of the school board and get yourself a good lawyer to fend off the lawsuits because you're going to restore traditional American values, which Christianity would obviously be one of, or you have to go homeschool. Mm-hmm. That's it. Those are your choices, because you cannot leave your child inside a satanic, transgender, authoritarian personality, pornographic environment. What do you think the kid is going to come out with at the other end of it? I mean, just the vaccine schedule, for God's sakes, is going to damage his body or her body. So just, parents simply have to make this really difficult choice. And I think that in this regard, things are looking up, because the unvaxxed are an ideal sort of accelerant to this process. The unvaxxed have the skepticism. I mean, if you went through all the propaganda and then come out the other end unvaccinated and your kids are unvaccinated, you're just not going to put them back in the public school. You're going to be open to, some critical thinking about all that. So I'm just hoping that we're going to see a dramatic increase in homeschooling in some areas, and then in others, a just complete revolution in terms of school boards.
Well, the FBI will probably have a intel report from the Southern Poverty Law Center claiming that those who are vaccine hesitant or didn't vaccinate it are a source of domestic violence terrorism, like traditional Latin mass Catholics, or parents who don't like grooming at school or critical race theory at schools.
Yeah. I mean, they talk about Latin mass Catholics as potential civil revolutionaries. This really kind of cracks me up, Tim, because as an altar boy, a young boy during Latin mass, I didn't see any violence. I was an altar boy for a long time, maybe 6 years or something. And I did a lot of masses, and I never saw a single domestic terrorist event. So
no talk of blowing anything up.
No, you kind of missed all that. So anyway, it's just, these things are ridiculous, and they are at the end of their rope. The vaccine, I think, it should have been the last blow they can land against us. From here on out, we should at least, particularly the people who are unvaxxed, should be able to, have the wit to not have blow after propaganda blow. Because if you just think about it, you go back, in our lifetime, say 50 years, there's just been one psychological blow, skillfully designed attack, from the authoritarian personality, through TikTok and the pornography for everyone. That the social media presents today. It's just been one after another. I think now there's enough skepticism that we can at least organize, the group that is our world. Is Chuck Schumer, does he really believe any of these things? That would be tantamount to him
to him being mentally ill or brain damaged. So he's
Christians, why does anyone believe him? Look at his face.
Right. So, but then what is it? You see, I mean, now you have to have an answer to that. What is it? You know, why this insanity? You know, what is the point of it? Well, it is a last gasp attempt at propaganda control by someone who hates and is animated and has organized against European Christian culture. That's what the guy is. I mean, it's just transparent. Mm-hmm. So why isn't there some accusations of him being that? You see, this is the next step, is that we need political people to actually step into out of the, oh my God, your attacks are false, they're weak, we're on the defensive, or someone has to go on the attack and just say, this guy is just saying a lot of nonsense to break the minds of Europeans because he hates Christians. This is hatred here. This is Chuck Schumer with the smile and all this. This is hatred. You couldn't behave like he does. And I mean, just think about that. Think about, you know, it's not just political maneuvering. I mean, you know, we can, you know, talk about this, but this is the result of real deep felt hatred. He couldn't exist, in my opinion, without that. So that has to be pointed out. It certainly has to at least be pointed out as a possibility.
Josh Hawley, the senator, I think from Tennessee, he was taking down Merrick Garland for his department's treatment of Mark Hawk, he was acquitted after 1 hour. He was the pro-life protester who got in a scuffle with a gentleman in Philadelphia a year or two ago. No local charges were filed, but nevertheless, Merrick Garland's Justice Department brought charges in violation of the FACE Act and sent 20 armed agents to his house in the early morning to terrorize his family. He was dragged away, charged for violating the FACE Act, threatened, faced with 10, 15 years in prison and these things, acquitted in 1 hour. It's obviously intimidation. And Josh Hawley is going through this. Why did you do this? And Merrick Garland's, hemming and hawing and saying, well, I don't believe your characterization of events, although that's what happened. But the fact that he was acquitted in 1 hour doesn't really lend much to the validity of the case brought against him. You see, what do you have against this man? Of course, there's a picture of this man with his wife and five or six kids in a church. Well, what does Merrick Garland have against the Catholic with six kids and a wife?
Yeah, exactly.
You might want to ask that. What personal vendetta do you have? I mean, is it the abortion issue? Is because you don't agree with his politics and the fact that abortion was overturned and now you're trying to reverse that in your own little way with your abuse of the Justice Department? Is it the fact that he's Catholic?
Well, exactly.
You're Jewish.
If they did that much, it would make it a lot more difficult for them to just gen up propaganda productions against Europeans, because they would just someone calling them out, just saying, look, I think this could be a racial hatred. This is what I honestly think is a possibility. We need to have this discussion. I know
if you had a Catholic attorney general going after a Jewish organization, and as we said a couple weeks ago, there's probably a lot more basis for going after some of these Jewish outfits for anti-American, unlawful activity, terrorist activity. There's much more of a history there if you look at it, espionage and these things. But nevertheless, if you reverse the situation and you had a Jew who was arrested for some minor scuffle with a protester a year or two before, and he was dragged away by FBI agents and brought up, trumped up on charges, no doubt that a senator or Jewish groups would accuse the attorney general of being anti-Semitic. No doubt.
Right. And so this is the battle that's going to have to be waged. But when they have that charge, the response is not to try to defend, but to attack and say, that's ridiculous. You're bringing this up as kind of a propaganda, and you're the one with racial hatred. It's not us. We just don't feel, we don't operate that way. You operate that way. And so let's get into this. Let's start thinking of, about your hatred of Europeans. And we need, and so if they would bring that.
Well, the FBI is now a terrorist organization by association, because the FBI is working with the SPLC. They're feeding intelligence information to the SPLC. The SPLC is evidently tied in with Antifa. So, I mean,
At this point, you've had such a, the long march through the institutions have been so successful that all the inner city governors, our governments have been compromised. I mean, I gave the example of Newark, those poor devils, who are, obviously really not qualified for these roles and were selected for other purposes. But they were maneuvered into place over this long period of time.
And well, this is funded through like foundation funding, NGO funding for,
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, this goes back to the 60s with the Ford Foundation, was at the, and also you have, it was revealed during the 70s, during the committee hearings. What was his name? It's late. Looking into CIA.
Oh, yeah, I can't believe I can't bring him up. Yeah. But I know what you're talking about. He was, yeah, I mean, those are, that's where MK Ultra revelations.
Yeah, came. Yeah, but it was exposed that Sergeant Shriver at the Office of Economic Opportunity had given like $900,000 to the Blackstone Rangers, a black criminal gang, to harass, I think, white Poles out of the neighborhood to create criminal activity. I mean, it's like,
Yeah. So this is, you can see that there, we have this idea that, it's a sunshine democracy somehow in America. That's the biggest illusion that they give us. They've been using propaganda techniques to control these things for 100 years. And, we just have to, we have to kind of find ways to regain our sanity.
The church committee hearings.
And also to get enough political power so that we can protect ourselves against genocide. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't have representation to stem off the vaccine mandates. And that's really, how low our democratic power is at this point.
Yeah, we saw kind of how the regime, if you will, all operated in lockstep, if I may, borrow a title or Rockefeller. Brothers white paper on this, but how the system kind of worked in lockstep. You have these various state governments, health state level health agencies, the universities like Johns Hopkins and Imperial College of London, all working together. For years, they've been coordinating this stuff, funding the research, getting all the people in place to do this. And when the time came, there's lower the boom. The same thing with, with January 6th, that's something that Tucker Carlson is exposing the corruption with these videotapes, meaning that a false narrative was spun to justify a legal case in a complete abuse of the judicial process where the judges, these federal judges themselves, who are supposed to put a check on this, and they're not. They're aiding and abetting it, which is a crime in and of itself. But when you get like judges appointed who can't tell you, what section, Article 2 of the Constitution deals with, which apparently we're getting with the Biden administration, this is what you get. Now, some of these judges, I think, were Republican appointees, like Royce Lamberth is a Republican appointee. But a lot of them are these, it's the district in Washington, D.C., which are just obviously just either far left or just part of the regime. I mean, if not ideologically committed,
regime. At this point, it's just a giant political cesspool, and the first step is localism, just really intense focused localism, networking to try to find friends that are like-minded. There's in Santa Cruz, there's actually a little group that is a sort of vaccine awareness, freedom, health freedom group, which set up because of the resistance to the mandates, but now has continued, and it's becoming like a little, nascent political organization. And this is what has to happen just everywhere, just extreme localism, try to get representation in the small elections, and then put people in power that are bold, who will try to use whatever power of sovereignty the district that they are representing has, and in fighting against federalism and, or even the governors, to have a public attack, to accuse them of evil. because then this is how, you know, we can bubble up to some kind of power where you don't have people like Gavin Newsom, you know,
yeah,
coming from the J. Paul Getty household, for God's sake.
Right, at the very least, you put them on the defensive.
Exactly. But you see, they can't really go on the defensive, because going on the defensive is, you know, they if they did that, they would be out of office and in one election cycle. They have to just keep attacking, but you just have to keep forcing them to be more and more ridiculous, because that's how people more exposed, more clear that there's evil.
Well, evidently that's working.
Yeah. They're not here to try to create a workers' paradise. They're here to create a dictatorship. They're not here to like make you healthy. They're here to genocide. You know, just start little things like this to get people to think more clearly, you know?
Okay, Joe.
All right, Jim. Thank you so much for the discussion, and we'll get them next week, brother.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.